Hello, everybody. It's great to be here one more time today. My name is Gary Fowler. I'm the CEO, president, and founder of GST Get You Done Venture Studios, a premier AI and quantum venture studio located in the heart of Silicon Valley. I'm a 17-time serial entrepreneur with several unicorns under the belt. I was on the original management team at Click Software, which has sold to Salesforce for $1.35 billion, and also Eva.ai, an AI HR tech company that co-founded with Dr. David Yang. We believe at GST that intellectual capacity is evenly spread around the world, but opportunities are not. And today I have an incredible guest. Dev is here, and we are going to be talking about Mira Rotra. We're going to be talking about her incredible journey from private equity and venture capital to co-founding TVA. So I have a lot of questions, and I'm sure she's got a lot of answers. Hi, Dev.
Hey, Gary. Thank you for having me.
So, I saw something that said quite interesting that you're going out, and the very end of your one of your statements said you liked looking for places for beer.
Yeah, that is kind of a full-time job on this idea.
No, that's great. I love it. So, what made you really shift from investing to building, in the Gen AI content space? What did you just like wake up and say, oh, well, I'm by the way, did you go to IIT in India or something, or you just woke up and said, I want to do this?
No, I did not go to IIT, but I was an engineer, as most Indians are. So that stereotype sticks. My investing to creative was very random. I wish I had a better story, but I was investing very happy in my life. We were doing D2C e-commerce, a lot of retail tech, health tech, and ed tech. And just because I had exposure to the space, I would speak to a lot of people. And Walmart came out, said that they're trying to build something in live commerce. Live commerce back in the day was very big, and it still is in China, wherein people would on apps come up and talk about products how you would see on Instagram and TikTok, except that whatever they're talking about can pop up and get added to your cart. And so because content consumption was key, and that could make a lot of sales go up, they wanted to crack that. And they needed somebody who can build that business from scratch for them, which made sense financially, but also from a creative standpoint, did it just like Instagram did it or TikTok did it. And so they floated that project out. I met somebody who was looking at that project. I just wanted to have more conversations because it was so exciting. And one thing led to another. We got the project, started it. It got entirely funded. And Amazon came on as well. And then all the other e-commerce brands came on. It just snowballed into a business. And so TVA, which was my prior venture, that happened. And that was my first tryst with what the creative industry looks like. I did not know anything about production. I could not tell you if a camera is needed or not, or where the camera needs to be. But I learned a lot over those 3 years. And then once I exited that business, I knew that I wanted to do something exciting again. Did not know that I would come back into the creative industry, but saw what's happening in the AI space with marketing. And all the content that I'd made during TVA, I knew that we could do that better, cheaper, faster with AI. And so that conversation started. And I met Eric, who's the founder at 3LC, which is my current venture. And we just, again, chatted for 6 months like I chatted during the Walmart project. And it just snowballed into what this is today, the business that I'm running right now.
No, that's fantastic. So, let's dive into the themes. Studio quality video content at 90% less cost. How is, by the way, my AI listens and it comes up with questions. So just so you know, I actually have a multi-agent large language model that we built that's here right now. And it's kind of like my grandmother. It loves me and cares about me. But what it just said to me, it's how is 3LC making this possible? And what does it mean for performance marketing? So studio quality, video content, and 90% less cost. It's curious about how it makes it possible.
No, of course. That's a good question. I think from how it's making it possible, I'm sure you've tried your hands on Google VO, Runway, on all of the other softwares that exist. So from a tech standpoint, I think it's very much possible. How it's creating a difference in the performance marketing world or the marketing world in general is one, of course, performance marketing requires you to come up with a lot of content because for every product, you need to know what's really working. And so your A-B testing needs to constantly keep going on. So a lot of growth marketers require a lot of content at the speed of light, which used to be a little bit of a bottleneck. And then they figured out with, let me just change the font size and retry the asset. And so all of those were going on manually. With AI, you can have video assets as well, change at the speed of just changing your font size. You can literally come up with a new video. So that speed of what growth marketing needed now is possible with you. And so that's where the marriage is happening. But in general, a lot of researchers that existed, for instance, Amazon for the longest time had been telling all their sellers that if you put a product video vis-a-vis a product picture, the probability of somebody adding your product to cart would be much higher. And so people wanted to build product videos for their D2C sites as well as Amazon marketplaces, but it's too expensive to keep building videos. But now you can at much cheaper. So there's that performance marketing element as well, where on your e-commerce sites, you can also start putting video out. All of those things are just phases that people are seeing AI in.
So, you know, can you share an example where AI-generated video content delivered better results or comparable results, even superior to a traditional studio? I mean, can't believe the questions it asks. Honestly, it's like, I love this stuff, right? Studio production. So it's very curious, by the way.
Yeah. So studio production essentially is if I were to go out, hire a crew, get myself a location, do a proper ad production, whatever that would cost, you could do that from your computer, at least 90% of it, if not the entire thing. And so that obviously entails a lot of the cost advantage. So that's literally the math side of it. But from an impact standpoint, what's happening is because a lot of these commercials that you would otherwise produce from scratch with production teams can be made from scratch, a lot of that money is going towards growth marketing. And then that allows you to experiment more. And so then that allows you to sell better. But from a performance marketing standpoint, it's just as plain as you can do more A/B testing faster. So you make your mistakes quicker. And so you're failing cheap. And that's giving you a better CAC. Or customer acquisition cost. So both ends, the savings is kind of giving you the flywheel of how you end up making more money.
Sounds great. So how do you balance cost savings with creativity and authenticity, which are often seen as the soul of marketing content?
So I think that's where Eric comes in. He was a filmmaker. He's had his short films premiered at Sundance Festival. He's big in the creative space and he's really good. When he sits with the AI software and the team that, you know, is looking at more from a tech angle, there have never been conversations that are very tech friendly, which I love. It's mostly about, we need to get this right. This is the emotion we're going for. And so all the videos are looked at from a very creative standpoint. It's almost like how you would go about in an agency, where people are literally passionate about the creative output. It's seen from that angle. It's just that we're doing it in a little more efficient manner through tech. So we don't like to call ourselves a tech company. We're not a tech company at all. It's more just a creative company that's using tech to make it better.
I love that. In your view, which industries or even types of brands are positioned to gain the most from AI-driven content strategies?
So when we started out, the traction was from everywhere and everyone wanted to experiment with it. But what we've realized is our sweet spot, at least right now, is with a lot of consumer tech companies, primarily because they need to put out content much faster than anyone else would. And they need a lot of content quantity. So the frequency of their needs kind of matches with the frequency that we need to provide things at a certain cost. We did try enterprise tech. A lot of the explainer videos that you normally see, tutorial videos a lot of the times, can be made much cheaper, and we've done that. But for us to deliver certain things at a bundled price of much cheaper, it just makes sense to work with consumer tech companies. And so that's one industry that I think is going to just blossom.
Deb, you've worked across India, the US, and Europe. How do you see different regions adopting Gen AI in marketing?
That's a very good question. I think...
By the way, it just wrote back to me. Thank you, Dev. It just wrote me back. I learned from it. I'm like its student, you know?
Of course, yeah. I mean, we are very pro-AI, as you can see. So I love it. But good question on the geography bit. I would love to think about it. But I think what comes to mind is I have seen a lot of people experiment heavily with anything that new comes in the market that's new in the US. Whenever I'm speaking with marketers right now as well, the good thing is a lot of them have tried it out. And they all, I mean, they know that they've not gotten it right. And so that's when where we come in. So my pitch becomes easier. But it's good that people are trying it out. I think that hands-on approach is very impressive. I don't know if I've seen that a lot in India. I think people try it out, but they're skeptical at first, and then they would get their hands on it. They would be curious. They might read up on it. They might love a conversation. But the as soon as VO launched, the number of people that I spoke with in the US that had already tried it out, that was a distinct for sure.
You know, as a founder and CEO, what's been the toughest challenge in building a Gen AI content services business from scratch?
Good question. I'd like to believe that TVA did give me a little bit of a headway there. But what was challenging was we knew at the get-go that it cannot be an automated business. We are not building a tech that you can click on and a video will get generated. And so just getting people to appreciate the idea of there is a human layer, which obviously gives you a little bit of a good quality assurance. But that also means that the cost would not be as dramatic as you would expect it to be right now. You cannot get a video for $200. But we will get there. And up till we get there, we'll save some money on the journey as we go. And so what? How do we define this? This is somewhere between what an agency used to be maybe in 2010s and what maybe video AI could look like in 2027. It's not very far. But we're somewhere in between. And so how do we define ourselves? And how do we get people to just experiment with it a little bit and to realize that this is a completely new assembly line for marketing? It's not very different from what they do today. We're just doing it a little differently. And so how does the BD process need to be? So the BD as well as our pitch on who are we, that was a little difficult to crack. But I think we're somewhere where we'd like to be.
This one's funny. How do you foster trust with clients when AI can feel like a black box technology? And then it said, present company excluded. So it means itself.
Yeah, no, I completely get that. And that's always been a conversation. We've been very ethical with using the products. We always put it out that, you know, all the voices we're using, all the faces we're using, they're not made off of anything. The products that we end up using would be licensed by the company. And so everything is very legally secure. And that conversations we've had at the get-go. Good thing is a lot of the companies have realized that even when everything that we're generating is almost from a black hole, wherein it never existed before, we've sort of just given it birth. There still needs to be a level of IP and copyright with stuff that we're making. And so those copyright conversations are had with each client, and we have contracts completely inbuilt. All of that is also something that we figured out along the way. I don't think we had all of those thoughts figured out when we started the company. So it's shaping up. We make sure that just legally anything that's put out by clients checks all the boxes. And so that's sort of been the learning curve.
So what leadership lessons from your investing background have proven most useful as a CEO?
I think when I was an investor, a lot of the times we would, when we would do venture capital investing, a good thing that we kept in mind was we meet the founder, we hang out with the founder, we see what the founder looks like and their humbleness or agility or just candor always showed up in what the culture could look like when we invested versus when we did exit. And that sort of crux remained the same. And if that remained the same, you could see that the 1,000 people who've joined the company are sort of almost similar to what the person that we got, we funded was. And I wouldn't say that's the make or break, but that was a good formula to go by on. If you look at the founder, you could see the company that they might build. And when I started the first venture, I knew that I wanted to be one of those. It was just an attempt, but I think that trained me this time around as well, where upfront I'd be like, I don't know a lot. We'll learn along the way. We'll figure it out. come what may, day or night, I'm going to be available. It's almost as if I'm a team member. The executive role just gives me a little more responsibility. I'm going to be the shit umbrella. I remember my previous partners used to have the joke of, we're the shit umbrella, we're going to save everyone from all the shit, and nobody's going to know anything. In the morning, we're smiling again. And that's what kept it going. You're very light about everything. Nothing's as serious as we think it is. Nothing's as deep. And that's literally been the motto even right now.
So, you know, if you could imagine marketing landscape 5 years from now, how will Gen AI transform the way brands engage with customers?
Good question. Performance marketing for sure would be very automated. I think it's a very algorithmic function as is. There is a lot of human layer to it, but 5 years down the lane, it would have cracked that. There are companies out there who are doing it very well even right now. So 5 years down the lane would be much more dynamic. From a content standpoint, I'm pretty sure we would have gotten to a place where we can generate at least basic level of content. The creative level of the commercials that you see in Super Bowl, for instance, those would still require a lot of human intervention. But that is more from a creative supervision standpoint and not the laborious process of making content. Hopefully by that time we've built an assembly line where from performance marketing to the iterations you keep getting from Meta and Google, the feedback, and that can come into content, manifest into content, and come back through performance marketing and run again. So that loop, I hope by 5 years we can definitely get that.
So do you think marketeers will evolve into AI orchestrators rather than content creators in a traditional sense?
I think it's inevitable. I do believe there will be friction. I definitely sense that there would be both the parties coming into a middle ground where we realize this is how we need to serve the solution, and marketers realize they need the solution more than they want or desire it. But eventually we would come to a place where I think marketers would be comfortable with the idea of, if this is saving me money and I can spend it on growth, or if I am at X revenue right now and can get me to Y by not trading off on a lot of what I expect off of the content, then why not? Let me do it. Let me try it out. And once you've tried it out, you would see the impact and you eventually get there. It's the same cycle with all industries. It's just a new industry, a new way of looking at it.
Well, you know, and my opinion is, if people don't use these superpowers, they're going to be out of business. They're not going to be able to compete. Because you can't, you know, I use AI 4 to 6 hours a day. I've been in expert systems 29 years, tech 40 years. I built 17 startups and a couple of unicorns. I've seen a lot of stuff. I can tell you one thing. These are truly superpowers. I mean, just like right now when we're going through this, you couldn't even imagine this 2 years ago that you would have something that's like your grandmother that's very, very interested in you, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, it just wrote me so listen to this. It just said, you've got this mix of being deeply immersed in AI at work and then exploring New York's beer spots in your downtime. How do you balance the intensity of running a tech startup with your personal passions?
I've never been overwhelmed by work. Even when we were doing 18-hour deal days, I would be smiling by the 18th hour. And when there were days in the startup when we didn't know where the next month's revenue is going to come from, I mean, you know, you can figure it out. You know that come what may, there'll be something that clicks. So thankfully, I don't know. It could just be looking at my family running different businesses that I was trained into not being very stressed. I'm like this, joking around all the time, even during stressful scenarios. So I don't think work has taken that away, luckily. But I like to believe that I have some level of work-life balance and some checks and balances there, where even if the weekdays have been crazy, I would try and find out some time with my friends and just rant it out or chat it out on the weekends. If not, I try and make time for dinner in the evenings and not think about work. And that does it.
No, that's fantastic. You know, one of the things that there's a statistic that only 10% of the venture capitalists who are on the average of 24 to 33 years old have ever built a company. Yet they're trying to tell us how to do it. Most of them had degrees in finance, and I've been in those situations, and sometimes it's like Dumb and Dumber. You know what I mean? It's like, don't get it. You know, they care about the 2 and 20. They're not really, they don't get how to run a company. And so, you know, Harvard started the first MBA to teach managers how to manage, not how to be entrepreneurs. In fact, risk was a negative thing. So that being said, the model's flawed, Dev. You know what? That makes no sense, because you get people in there many times. You know, I'm down in Palm Beach at my house right now. Some of the wealthiest family in the world are my neighbors, right? And it's interesting because they're limited partners in most of the funds.
Right.
And, you know, they ask me about what's happening, right, in terms of the market. And they want to get more actively involved.
Yeah.
I know a lot of my friends have been involved in med tech, and some parts of med tech, biotech, 85% of the funding over the last year has been the family offices, right? It's not the VCs, it's family offices. And so it's changed. And, you know, I'm going to the family office events, you know, a couple times a month, and I'm meeting with them, and more they're like, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Should I do this? Should I put $125 million in that? You know, they're just, as friends, asking questions. Right. Do you think there's going to be an evolution? Because I feel it happening now, because people have so much power at their hands that the families will take a more proactive standpoint in investing and say, listen, why would I want to get such a low number because I'm hiring these people, ladies and gentlemen, to do my investing? Why don't I just do it through my family?
Yeah, I mean, it's not far-fetched, honestly. I do think the investing world has become democratized a lot. And this is not even something that I've seen over a decade. I think in the last 5 years also, a lot has changed. And even when you're talking to people who are not yet ultra HNIs, who've made some level of income, it could be that they were involved with a startup and they saw that growth and the stocks just rose, or it could be from their businesses. But as soon as they get to a certain level, even if you have a conversation with people who are yet to be HNIs, you would see that they have exposure about how to invest their money, or at least the idea that, you know, I've been thinking about angel investing, or I've been thinking about putting my money in equity. And I know that that's where the returns are going to come from. It's not straightforward anymore, and you've got to invest in the startup.
And if you don't do it, you're going to fall behind. You know, we're one of the families, right? So as my family office, it's the same thing. We go out, you know, we're looking for deals. We're an operational family office. It's a little different because we're all over the planet Earth all the time looking. You know, it's kind of like there's diamonds in the rough everywhere. Most people don't get it. You know, they don't get it. And, you know, go to a place in Nigeria, Ghana, Zambia, South Africa, Kenya. You go to IIM or IIT, or you meet with the folks from Thai. You find these companies that are incredible. But the other thing is they are generally engineers. They've never built a company. So they don't understand it. They think marketing is voodoo. They used to think it. But now they understand that the power of marketing, the power of the network and contacts, the operational expertise, and the access to capital can have on a company. Profound impact, right? Yes. And so if there's got to be a change with the companies, because now AI does give you superpowers, and it's amazing, actually, the kind of things that you can possibly do. I built a cancer vaccine last year, right? And so my dog had stage 4 cancer, and I said, what can I do to be able to do this? It went down through and told me at a molecular level how to go down through and do it, and who could build the vaccine. Like, my dog went in complete remission of stage 4 cancer. Seriously. Now, I had stage 3 kidney disease. It told me, I ran the same models on myself. It told me the mesenchymal stem cells, I took too much ibuprofen, right? Mesenchymal stem cells could help me from umbilical cords. Within 2 weeks I had them, I went in complete, my kidney disease that I had went back to zero. I have none. Right now, imagine the possibilities in our lives. It's amazing. You know, I've been working a lot with Frontier Medicines, companies like Calviri, which is immunotherapy that's part of my portfolio, which is we've in dogs reduced cancer by 40% by doing immunizations, and we believe by the end of next year it'll go to 80. So, by the way, that same kind of vaccine could work on humans. So we're in a very incredible stage in our lives where these profound tools, you know. The other thing is, Dev, most people don't get that thing, you know, we're starting to work with quantum computers. They're 100 million times faster than the fastest supercomputer. What would take you 10,000 years takes us 200 seconds. These are real statistics, and Google went out and benched it 3 years ago, right? So this is a statistic. But we're actually imagine the possibilities for things like drug discovery. Imagine going down through contracts. Imagine going down through video creation. You could create a movie on the fly. Oh, I want to learn about, I want to see Indiana Jones 5. Could you make it? And it makes it. And I want it to have a happy ending.
Right.
And it puts it together in whatever language you want. And we're coming to that. You know, we're not that far away, right?
Right, of course. I mean, I do remember there are two startups, I think, in the Silicon Valley. You might know them, but both of them are working in the area of what if I want some other ending in the movie? And specifically, can you make this character, you know, the villain? Or can you make this character the protagonist and, you know, take that arc with the entire storyline? And it completely changes the entire series that you're watching, and it's a personalized experience. They're already working on it. I think they've got funding last week. But it's happening today, so it's not very far.
You know, the listen, we're coming up to the top of the show. We want to stay for a few minutes afterwards and welcome you, spend some time with you. So these are simple things. What advice would you give marketeers or founders who want to start experimenting with AI-powered content today?
I'd say take baby steps. We did too. Try something that's not make it or break it for you. We always recommend people to start with performance marketing and content that they're putting out on their website, because that's not directly impacting them tomorrow. The next step is commercials. Try and see if you can make baby commercials and run those, because they give a lot of return on investment. And they don't involve production anymore, so you don't have to decide whether to do it or not. Just do it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It's not that expensive of a mistake. So make those cheap mistakes just so that you realize what the impact is, and then you can make bigger decisions knowing that, okay, this is what I got. Those experiments and those baby steps are just step one.
So closing thoughts, and how do people get a hold of you, Dev?
I am available everywhere. LinkedIn, I'm very active on my email, dave@3lc.ai. Closing thoughts are... we're here to change the game of marketing. I have always loved marketing as an investor. I knew that that was a game changer, and that's what's going to get me the revenues. And as a previous entrepreneur, it was my blood and money. So I'm as immersed in marketing as possible and as passionate about it. Let's do it together.
There you go. Let's do it together. That's great.
Get it done.
That's a great tagline. And so the AI likes that too, by the way. Just a clap on that thing. So thanks for taking time in your busy schedule to join us today. And I really appreciate it. And thanks to all of you for joining one more time. GSD presents Silicon Valley AI and Tech's Top Global Startups. My name is Gary Feller, and I'm your host. Stay happy, stay safe, and stay healthy. And we'll be back to you again soon with another exciting edition. Thanks, everybody. And thanks, Deb.
Thank you, Gary.